Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
And welcome everyone to episode 50 for March 28th. We are going back in time to March 28th, 2014, when the show was supposed to come out.
Yeah, that's not Trevor's fault at all.
No, I'm not blaming. Did you hear me blame anybody?
I wouldn't have blamed Trevor.
No,
I mean that would just be uncool.
And we would hurt his feelings, and we know how sensitive he is.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't want to give him a cold shoulder or anything.
Just get on with it.
So I'm one of your hosts, Owen Flewelling, and this is Matthew and Trevor on my left.
Well, Trevor is supposed to come next, but I guess he's shy. Maybe he's probably still sleeping, but that's okay.
We know he's not buried in a snowbank.
No.
So.
Not yet. Today's supposed to be the day. Which reminds me, by the way, I would just like to start this week's show off by saying, Owen Flewelling, I hate you.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the bump. Son of a gun.
So do we want to tell people about what's going on there now or save that for later?
All right, let's do it now. All you people with way too much free time on your hands and energy have been throwing yourselves in snowbanks like, can I say idiots?
You can say idiots if you want to.
So you idiots have been throwing yourselves in the snow for the sake of throwing yourselves in the snow and then challenging, air quotes here, friends to do the same. Because if you're silly, apparently you must think three of your friends are equally as silly. And I was called out first by a member of the Rescue Gun Club, and I didn't even acknowledge the first.
That was Luke, right?
No, it was Alana.
Oh, it was Alana. Oh, yeah. That must have been a while ago then.
Shout out to Alana for getting her SR9 this week.
Oh, hey, very cool. SR9s are cool guns. I got one of those. Wow, Jewel has one of those.
So I ignored that outright. She called Muffin out, too. He ignored it outright. Well, he may have had some explicatives for her, but anyway, he mostly ignored it outright. But it didn't stop there. You podcasters started doing it. And then, of course, if podcasters are doing it, well, I should have to do it, too, says the listeners. And I decided to tell the listeners to put their money where their mouth was. If they wanted to see me jump in the snow, they could see that by coughing up money towards our charity, the autism.
Which is a great idea, by the way.
I know. I'm such a con artist, right? Yeah. So, yeah, no, that's what I did. I called them out. I said, you want to see me jump in the snow? Start coughing up money for the Laurentides Autism Foundation that we're raising money for at this year's charity shoot. And I should have, you know, be careful what you wish for, right? I said $100.
You should have put $1,000.
You should have put $1,000. Yeah. Right?
I was silly enough to say $100, and then all of a sudden, I don't even know how it spun into Muffin's going to throw him in the snow if we can get an extra $25. Or somebody said that. I'll pay an extra $25 to see Muffin throw him in the snow. So I was like, all right, make it $125. Muffin will throw me in the snow. And within about 48 hours, we had $150. That wasn't enough. Thank you, Owen, for almost doubling that with your one-time sizable donation of $100. And because of that now, I don't know if it's because of that or not. I guess I feel sorry for Jason Muffin. I don't think that he can actually pick my ass up and throw me over the railing. So I've recruited Officer Frank.
So the RCMP are going to rough you up this afternoon then.
He's pressed both of you.
Well, exactly. And by the way, he's the reason why I'm so hungover. I can't see out of my left eye this morning.
You only need one eye. You've got two. It's okay.
Right. And now my eye dominance problem is solved.
That's right.
So Officer Frank later on today and Jason are going to come over and throw me over the railing on my back deck down about 6 feet into, I hope, a lot of snow.
I hope you've checked that. And if not, well, we'll carry on without you.
Yeah, that's fine. As long as I land on my head, I won't be hurt. But if I land on anything else, So, yeah, thank you to the listeners for putting your money where your mouth is and manning up and paying to watch me get thrown into the snow. I feel the love. I really do. Thankfully, it's like only minus one today. So
yeah, you picked a good day. It was minus 10 or minus 15 and windy when I did it. So
and,
that was
and
a little...
What like you thought you were 12 years old in gymnastics class again? You went springing over your deck like a puma, launched yourself into a complete somersault over your railing, landed on your back in the snow. Listeners, if you haven't seen the video of Matthew throwing himself in the snow, you need to go check it out because it is epic. Like, you legit threw yourself in the snow. How did you, like... It's like you had a springboard right next to your railing. Boing.
Well, I only weigh 6 pounds, so I mean,
he only weighs 40 pounds.
Yeah, the wind pretty much just picked me up and threw me, so it's no big deal.
Awesome.
Hey, I figured if I was going in, I was going in fast and quick. That way, it's like how I get into a pool. I can't put my foot in and see how warm it is; otherwise, I just never get in. I gotta just jump in. So I just jumped in. Hey, this being said, you know, I'm never gonna complain about a cold pool again.
If
it's liquid water, I'll be good, because the stuff I jumped in was below freezing.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't find it that cold.
It actually wasn't. It was my feet that did anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. The walk back to the deck is going to suck.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
If you want to see it, it'll be on my new Facebook account. I have my personal one now, and then I have my Podcasting Life one. So it's Frelate, Trevor Frelate. So if you're a listener of the show and you want to add me and haven't done so yet, that's where you'll see the video. Search Facebook for Trevor Frelate.
Or you could just go to the Slamfire Facebook page. While you're there, like it, and then you can find him that way too, because he posts there pretty much every minute or so.
And we've fallen behind Paul Lathrop and the crew over at Polite Society Podcasts. We were ahead of them for, what would you say, months, years?
Well, for as long as before they existed, kind of thing.
Yeah. So they're like one more than us. So it's a little peeing contest now between us and them. So get over there and like our page. And actually, I will buy you a coffee next time I see you if you unlike their page. And
ooh,
by coffee, I mean beer. Unless you're 12.
Right. Then that's definitely coffee or
definitely
Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, Dr. Pepper. Wow. Okay, should we carry on?
I think we should, yeah. Owen, what did you do this week?
Nothing.
What are you going to do this week?
Well, I shouldn't say I did nothing. I ran to town today.
If he tells us what he's going to do, he'll have nothing to talk about next week.
I know. Terrible, but
well, he has it written down, so I figured I should ask.
After the show, I am planning on going crow hunting. So, we'll see what happens. This is like the worst time of day to hunt crows, but...
Can I give you some advice?
Buddy wants to go, so... What, don't go with Matthew?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good call. Although, that being said, the way Curtis and I hunt them, we're fairly successful at it. We basically just drive around the backcountry roads, and then when we see a flock of crows, we get out and then go hide in a ditch and then shoot them with the 22s in the field.
I'm going to call them and then shoot them with a shotgun.
Oh, that'll be fun, too. I haven't tried that yet.
I've only seen Owen shoot a crow once, and we mostly can't talk about it, but I remember the last thing.
We mostly can't talk about it. No laws were broken.
Last thing Owen said was, you guys are going to get me in trouble.
Look, we measured it off. We were farther away from that house than we thought we were. We were okay.
Yep.
Anyway, what else did you do, Owen?
I bought scope mounts for Savage Rascal this morning.
So are they standard or not?
No, they're...
I looked it up. Yeah, no, they actually are a different...
So it's not the...
It's not the Mark II receiver.
Oh, look at that.
I thought it would be. I mean, why wouldn't it be? But...
Seriously.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so I got those, and I also have a lead on a couple of scopes from a listener to the show, actually. Contacted me. I think episode 47 I mentioned... that I was looking for a red dot or something for my daughter's rifle. And anyway, so he contacted me and sent me some pictures. So I've got to follow up on that and make him an offer. So
cool.
Other than that, that's about it. I haven't done a whole lot. Been too busy.
You work too much.
I do work too much. I'm working on that. I'm working on not working as much.
That's a good idea, man. You should do that.
I'm going to get another job.
I was just going to say, you're going to have to skip this interview you got coming up if you want that to happen.
Yeah. Well, hopefully if I get that, then I can drop a number of other things.
Right. That would make
sense. Because this one will take more time.
Well, hopefully it'll actually take less time, sort of. But I just, it'll be a full-time permanent position that I can actually live on, and not then I can drop some of the other businesses I have.
Oh, you're going to throw me under the bus?
Oh, no.
Oh, not that business. Oh, good. Okay, good.
You're just going to do all the work.
You're just going to make me do all the work.
Nice. Be the silent partner that tells you what to do when you screw up.
That's right.
Trevor,
yes.
You? I'm sure you have a long windbag list, so.
I do, but I don't have the energy to really put a lot into it, so.
Well, thanks for letting us know what you did. I guess we'll all go
the
into
last 48 hours.
What's that? Oh, yeah, I've been asleep, yeah. The Versamax and the 870 barrel went off to Casey at Tactical Ordnance. That arrived on Friday or Monday, I can't remember. So, like, I'm anxiously awaiting the return. And I'm also, oh, that's just 26-inch. Interesting. Should say
yeah,
28.
No, I changed that.
Oh.
Yeah, I think you need a 26-inch barrel for that, not a 28. 28 is just too long.
Okay. So, I need according to Matthew, I now need a factory 26-inch barrel for my 870, but I'm also willing to entertain offers on a 28-inch.
That's what he thinks, but he really isn't.
28?
That's what I'm saying, Owen.
Goose gun is 28, plus it has a Pattermaster choke, which sticks out another 2 more inches.
You going to be goose hunting with your shotgun there, Trevor?
Well, maybe if Owen, you know.
Or are you ever planning on taking this out into the woods and walking through the bush and stuff with it?
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Well, then why would you want 28 inches when 26 will help you get through the thick brush better?
You know, I never.
That much of a difference?
Yeah, we're not in Nam, man. I haven't seen a bush I couldn't go through yet with my 28-inch barrel.
All right. Get whatever you want, I guess. This time, I'll let you have full reign on this.
Apparently, I used to run with my goose gun in the woods.
Apparently, Christina thinks going through I haven't seen a bush yet I can't get through with my 28 inches. It struck her as funny. She giggling her butt off. Anyway. And then, yes, I do need some water. Thank you. Then I picked up. Yeah, we're doing the show right now. You're interrupting.
The segment brought to you by Christina, Trevor's wife.
Yes. Then Mo, I accidentally bought 1,000 rounds of Tula. Mo's like, I think I got a smoking deal lined up on some Tula, 62 grain from that new. It's not Canada Ammo, but it's like Canada Ammo Supply, something like that on Facebook. You guys seen these guys?
Yes, I have. I forget what it is. It's like Canada Ammo Wholesale or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, so I'm like, oh, yeah? He's like, yeah, it's going to be a smoking deal. I'm like, yeah, well, if you're going to order some, let me know. Like a week later, yeah, I need the money for that ammo it's in. Like, what? I just still haven't finished paying off Matt Lorette for all the needless open gun stuff I bought from him for a gun that doesn't even run yet.
What's Tula ammo? I know what it is, but nobody else does.
So this is 223 steel case. So you just let it lie or, well, pick it up, but you don't pick it up and reload.
Well, you can pick it up with a magnet, this stuff.
Yeah, you pick it up, but you don't reload it. So it's steel-cased ammunition, and it's actually 62 grain. So it's a little heavier than the usual 55 grain bulk stuff that we buy.
Interesting.
I'm really looking forward to seeing how it runs in my NEA, because the NEA has the 1-in-7 twist barrel, right?
Right.
So, so I got 1,000 rounds of that, so I'll be able to use that for the Daniel Shaw Clinic. Actually, I lined up an AR for Daniel Shaw.
Oh, cool. He's going to need an AR. Officer.
Yeah? Pardon me?
He's going to need an AR, so that's
exactly.
Good.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I thought I was going to have to buy another one, right?
So, right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's okay normally what you would do. You know, you would just buy another one for, you know, a one-day event. That's cool.
Well, it is the plan. If I can get my NEA 10.5-inch back, I'm going to.
Oh, okay.
But there's a lot of things that I need to pay for between now and then. And,
right.
Do I need a third AR? We'll be right back where we started in the first place, right? More guns equals less time on the guns. So, you know, pick a couple and learn to use them. But I want it back. So, anyway. Officer Frank has said that he would join Daniel on the line to help run the line just to clear guns and stuff like that.
Nice.
He's not going to take the course because, you know, they can't do anything that contravenes their training.
Right.
He's off to Fredericton this week, actually, coming to take the instructor's course to learn how to certify other members in use of the new Air platform.
Cool.
So, yeah, he was telling me about it. It's going to be quite a nice gun. They got Colts.
Yeah, I saw one at the range, actually. Well, I've seen his, because he built one that's going to be the same.
Pretty much, yeah.
Right? And then I saw one at the range a couple weeks ago when I was shooting with those RCMP officers. They had one. Kind of like what Frank did. They bought their own and then did it up to the specs that the RCMP have laid out. So it is a nice gun. My only issue with it is, and this may be just, I don't know, just me the way I am, but their front sight is fixed. It's the triangle front sight, so you can't fold it out of the way. So anytime you look through the red dot sight, because they have EOTEX on them, you're always going to see that front post, which to me is distracting, but I guess you can get over that and learn and train with it and not see it, I guess.
Exactly. I've found that you don't notice that front sight.
Oh, yeah?
I flipped through a few, and even with my gun with the front sight flipped up, I've left it flipped up and moved with it. I don't even notice that front sight.
I do, and it could be because mine might be not the post, but the way that it flips up. I think that whole center part is thicker, and that could be why. Like it blocks a lot of my sight. Like it blocks a lot of my sight picture.
Mm. Really? See, I'm looking two eyes, so I don't even.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I still run two eyes too, but my right eye is dominant enough that I really pick up on that front sight. But I guess that's just me. I need to train more if I were to have a gun like that, but I don't, so it's not a big deal.
Mm. Yeah, with my EOTech, it's interesting. The front sight, the ears, if you will, that are on either side of the post, the 60 MOA dot, or circle rather, of the EOTech fit in there perfectly.
Oh, so interesting.
Everything lines up really nice, and it's easy to keep things straight. Mm-hmm. But I'm like you. I'm distracted by it. It's almost too much in my line of sight.
Yeah. Well, I think the whole idea behind a red dot sight is less clutter. You want as little clutter as you can get so you can focus on the target. Just simply put the red dot on the target and squeeze the trigger.
Yeah, without having to worry about lining things up.
Yeah.
So anyway, I put 500 in storage and of the Thule ammo. I put 500 away for a rainy day in my little bug-out bunker supply room there downstairs.
Right. Well, you should probably test it out first and see how well it runs before keep that as...
The other 500 is in the cabinet, so I'll take it out and see how it works and make sure there's no weak primer strikes in case there's like heavy, ridiculous primers or something. And so other than that, got to move along here, burn up time. I shot a match in Halifax at the AMA range, Sean Hansen's club, president of IPSC Canada.
Cool.
They do a fantastic job. Guys, if you get the itch to go shooting a match in the wintertime, it's well worth your drive. Trust me. 14 stages in basically one day, because you shoot a half day on one day and a half day on the next day. 14 stages, 280 rounds. Like, it was awesome. And you very quickly forget that you're shooting indoors. You just get focused on the stages and, you don't have... It doesn't feel like you're inside, I guess.
Right. How big is the indoor range?
I guess
where I'm going with
from
this
the shooting line to the back wall wouldn't be much more than 30, but I think the most we utilized was maybe 20.
How many squads did you have, I guess, is where I was going with that.
Two really big ones.
Oh, okay.
So because it's two floors...
Oh, it's a two-floor range.
Yeah, you had
so you can to, so one squad shot upstairs, one squad shot downstairs.
And then you switch.
Right.
So you started off on the first day upstairs, and then halfway through the day you went downstairs.
Because I was wondering how you would get that many people through when you don't have that much real estate to work with. But I guess, you limit it to a certain number of people, you can. Two big squads. And
yeah, they took 50 guys. So
over the
2 days with the...
So two 25-person squads, those are big squads.
No, because remember... Not everybody started at the same time. We had a group of guys start in the morning and a group of guys start in the afternoon. Yeah, so we started on the first day shooting at 1 o'clock, and there had already been guys that were finishing and leaving when we arrived.
Next
morning, we started at 8 o'clock, and we hit the road at 1 to go home.
That's a lot of logistics to get that done.
They are very well organized. They had a lot of good volunteers who knew what was up, and they used tablets for scoring. Not paper. And the beauty of the tablets is it automatically
auto scores you.
And as soon as the match is done, you hit send, boom, the scores are on the internet on a website called Practice Score. You look up the name of the match and all the data is there.
There an app for that for Android? I should get that.
I don't know what's an app.
We should get that for all the IPSC stuff. That just makes sense.
It's something that we're going to look at doing for sure.
Nice.
And then for a really big match, you can have a paper copy and a tablet. So you got the paper copy to keep for your own record.
Yep.
And the tablet scoring just keeps everything up to date really quickly.
So you have one electronic scorer and one paper scorer.
That's correct. Yeah. Yep. Since Sal can't run a calculator, let alone a cell phone, and right. doesn't know how to spell tablet. Right. I don't think.
if you said, "Sarah, hand me that tablet there," he'd probably pick up a bottle of aspirin or something.
Probably, yeah. And then ask you to shoot it out of the sky.
Right.
So, anyway, the match is awesome. Got to get down there and check it out, boys. It's a lot of fun. And, of course, Fusilier was there, and I didn't know it. He was talking to me, and I was pinching a fit because my wife had sent me a text about the roof leaking, so I was hitting the go button. I must have looked like or sounded like a real jerk. He was
well, you are, so that's okay.
Yeah, well, but now he knows it, you know right. what I mean, for real. So he just before assumed, but now he's had a taste of it, right? So shout out to him because he won the match.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and Andy was there, the guy who wants to shoot hogs with a Glock 20, 10 millimeter.
Right.
So he was there. Him and his buddy James were in my squad, super nice guys, for 1911 shooters, I mean.
Well, yeah, for 1911. I mean, we got to give them a bit of a pass. I mean...
We
They're going to shoot Glocks at hogs within 10 millimeter. I mean, that's got to be cool.
That's true, yeah. So his buddy James was shooting a Kimber single stack, and I saw at least one malfunction. Andy had two malfunctions, both ammo-related, I believe. And then his gun started to get some hammer fall, which was a lot of fun. People were asking to pay him to shoot his gun. So, but no, it's strange. It's strange. It happened three times, and the RO stopped them, and they ripped it apart, and Sean Hansen looked it over too, and they couldn't find anything wrong with that gun and couldn't get it to do it again. They were, you know, dry firing it in the yep. safety area, and the hammer wouldn't fall anymore. Sean deemed the gun good to go, and he brought it back to the match, never had a problem again.
Interesting.
Double stack 45 para. It's like, well, it weighs more than you do, Matthew.
Probably.
Big honking gun, big honking holes. A lot of fun to watch that thing go. So, yeah, and it was so funny because I was running my mouth about para on the last episode of Action Shooting Radio. And, yeah, who shows up with a para? Andy. who beats me, Fusilier, with the para? Yeah, so. And then I bought a bug out book. I went to a place called World's End Warehouse.
Mm-hmm. And they it's in Moncton, right?
Riverview. They owe us money. They started advertising on our Facebook page. Did you see that?
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to pay for that privilege or bugger off. That's what I say. Or give us a wicked discount or something. Anyway. So, yeah, I went in there and I met Owen's buddy Nate. And Owen hadn't been there yet. I was so excited. I called him. I'm like, oh my God, Owen, there's like, this is a prepper's wet dream. There's Mylar everywhere, food buckets everywhere, cases of MREs, other. Plastic cases of they're not MREs, but they might as well be, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of the same deal. 25-year like shelf.
Food.
Yeah, something like yeah. that. 25-year shelf life. There's like a, you can get a bucket that has like X number of breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, and there's those tablets you put in your water if there's like nuclear fallout, radiation, whatever. All kinds of great stuff. And they sell guns, and they sell Glock knives, and they sell Leathermans and smoke bombs. And anyway, so I bought a book on bug out bags because I'm looking at my bug out bag right now, and yeah, it's still empty, still sitting in the same place it's been sitting since October. One of these days I'll start I got my hunting bag next to it, which is kind of a bug out bag. Like, it's got a lot of survival stuff in it. It's the bag I take in the woods when I go hunting. I'm just kind of like transferring stuff over. So, and then I made a video for Tom to help analyze my draw to see if we can start changing my body position in some way to shave off some time. And I got down to under a second. On the video I had the part time set to 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
And there's quite a few there where I was at a second. And then I was like, well, this is going really good. So, you know, when practice is going good, practice more. So I went back, and I was getting under 0.9. I may have even hit a 0.7.
Nice. That's pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, you call it a sight picture, but it's, you know, the sights in the general direction of the target when you're pulling.
Sure. Well, if your target is like 3 feet away, you don't really need.
Exactly. Yeah. Much so of what I did was I set up minis in the man cave.
Yep.
Instead of full size targets, I've got minis.
That'll help you focus a little bit more on the.
Yeah. Yeah. And gives a little bit of perceived distance, right? So.
Yep.
All right. Cool. What about you, bud?
Well, went to Fredericton last weekend and went into the local gun shop, and there was a CZ-858 for sale.
What did they say about that?
I didn't say anything, and they just didn't bat an eye when I asked what it was. Oh, it's a CZ. Oh, what model CZ is that? Oh, it's the 858. Oh, I see. How much is that? $1,200. Oh, yeah.
What? And so they know.
What's that?
They know.
They might. I don't know. It might not be, the receiver might not have been one of the ones effective, because only the ones built after 2007 are affected, right? So it might have been an early model. I don't know. I didn't take it off the rack. Like, they didn't hand it to me. I didn't get to see it. I just saw it on the rack. Thought I knew what it was. Asked. They said that, and that was it. But it was just interesting to see it there and at that price.
Wasn't a VZ.
No, CZ.
And it was 7.62 by 39.
Mm-hmm.
Wowzer, $1,200. Yeah, I think they know, and they're just trying to cash in, because right after they announced that they were going to Prohib, they went for sale on CGN, or people on CGN were immediately trying to buy them.
Right.
I'm like, I don't get it. You know they're Prohib, but you're trying to buy them.
Well, see, it's a non-registered Prohib, and so they want it, right? Just to say they have a piece of, they have some gear that's not registered, and they can kind of fight the system, I guess.
Well, and if you want to get involved in the fight,
you're gonna lose a lot if you get caught with that, unfortunately.
Yeah, but if you own one, then you're going to fight a little harder, right?
Yeah, so, that's true. That's true, and it could be that mentality that they're going after there.
When you call your MP, and
you can then say, "I own one of these. What are you doing about them stealing $1,000 of my property?"
Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, that was interesting. I did take the AR back out to the range, and the world is now all better. I know say last week that the Nick Star scope works just fine, and people were like losing their minds. How can something from China work just fine? I'm here to tell you it doesn't. So it's okay. The Chinese crap is still Chinese crap. You can calm down now.
Your Nick Star scope that I had that's been around forever.
Yes, it turns out, or it looks like it'll work just fine on 22, but with AR, there's either something loose inside, or it just simply doesn't hold zero anymore. I've only ever shot it off 22 before. I'd never shot it off.
That's not true. You're forgetting that our first three gun. You ran my NEA 3.5
right,
and a half
that's
inch,
true, but though all that, yeah, all of those targets were up close.
Right? Yeah, but so I had it on there and sighted in.
And it held zero?
Yeah.
It doesn't hold zero anymore.
That's too bad.
I shot it. Now, that being said, I still got some really good groups with it. I was shooting under 2 inches with the Chinese surplus that I got, the Norinco surplus. So under 2 inches at 100 yards with that, and I put 8 rounds of reloaded ammo. I brought some ammo that I reload from my Axis out, and I got a really good group, really close to an inch. If there hadn't have been the one flyer, it would have been an inch easy. So it was, it shot well, like the gun shoots well, which I'm very happy with. But one group would be centered, I sighted it in. And centered it, of course. And then the next time I shot it, it was 7 inches to the left. The next time I shot it, it was like 5 inches to the right. So, and they were small groups, so I know that it's just the scope not holding zero. The zero is wandering. So
that's too bad.
Yeah. As I shoot it, remember I said last week, as the trigger reset, the scope reticle and everything would just kind of move. The whole sight picture moved.
Yeah.
And it was still doing that, just to a lot lesser extent. I had tightened down the screws that I had loosened before, but there's something now inside that has broken or let go or something, and it just...
Before you toss it, check with Luke Giroux, because the Nick Star scope that I sold Luke Giroux for his Daniel Defense was doing something similar. And
oh, yeah?
He resolved it.
Oh, interesting. I will... Luke, hit me up, man. Let me know.
Oh, a shout out to Luke for picking up powder for me today. Green Diamond had several jugs of H335 at Green Diamond, so he got a couple for himself and he got one for me.
Cool. So yeah, I'm now looking for either an aim point or some sort of fiber optic driven red dot sight for the AR. I want something kind of higher end. The MEPRO 21 I've been looking at looks kind of cool. It's fiber optic plus tritium, so day or night it's always got light. I think I'm leaning, they're fairly expensive, although the aim points are fairly expensive too, but if I get an aim point or something similar to that, I do want something that has a really long battery life, and I really like the fact that some of those aim points have 50,000 hour battery lives.
Yeah,
that's like just 5 years or something like that. It's crazy.
It's just too bad aim points weren't EOTech.
Yeah.
If they were, then I much prefer the display of an EOTech. I find the tube difficult. The spark is difficult too when you're used to looking at that heads up display square glass.
What kind of battery life do you get on the aim points?
On the EOTechs?
The EOTechs, yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. I know it is not as good as the aim point, but there
do
are
they
different,
at least, sorry?
There are different versions of EOTech that use different batteries. Like I've got one that takes double A's, and then there are some that take a similar kind of battery as the aim point. So they might be better. They do have auto shut off.
That was my next question. If they have auto shut off, at least, that's something. Because I've done this more times than I can count. I put my gun away with the red dot left on, and the next time I pick up my gun, it's dead.
With the EOTech, it's 6 hours from the last time you touched a button.
Yep, that's the same time frame as the spark. Which I did like. The spark has a 6,000 hour battery life, which
really,
you know, that's not 50,000 hours, but 6,000. If you turn it on once a day and turn it back off, it'll last a year. Letting the 6 hour thing turn itself off.
I've never had a battery go dead on my spark.
Well, you will eventually, of course.
Eventually, but I'm just saying, I've ran that spark now for.
Didn't we have to change one at the 3-gun right before you went?
No, that actually, I changed the battery thinking that's what it was, but it was, I had just hit
the night vision button.
The night vision dimmer or whatever by mistake. Because when I put the new battery in, it still did the same thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's weird. And I hit the back and that button and it came back on.
Yeah. I'm not really sure if I like that button.
I don't like it either. I wonder if there's a way to disconnect it, seeing as none of us have night vision.
No, I like it.
Oh, well, does.
I found that in low light situations in my house, when it's dark, when the lights are off and it's dark outside, I found it's perfect because the lowest setting of brightness is too bright, still too bright. There's too much glare. Click that on and it's perfect for low, with no mistake. Yeah, that's right. Well, and it's the first thing you know to check. I mean, it's not that big of a deal.
That's right. It is only one more button press. You just press it again to see if it comes back on. If not, then you know it's your battery.
Yeah.
So, So anyway, that's what I've been kind of doing. Other than that, I did teach a winter survival class to a group of grade sixes yesterday. And by teach, I mean supervised while they played in the snow. So it turned out it was more of, they just wanted to not be in class for a while, which, you know, whatever. We went snowshoeing out in the woods and taught them how to build a fire properly. So we built some fires and played with matches and flints and sparkers and lighters and stuff. So they had fun with that. And then other than that, reached a really cool milestone on my YouTube channel yesterday, finally at 1,000 subscribers.
Nice.
So I've got more subscribers than we have likes on our Facebook page. So go subscribe to my YouTube channel and go like the Facebook page. but there is a link to my YouTube channel. It is a gun-related YouTube channel. Pretty much every video I have is of guns. Except for the one with the moose. Except for the one with the moose. And that one is implied guns because shooting moose. That's right. They are targets. So,
Tasty edible targets.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to upcoming events and news. People who have not sent in t-shirt orders or money for the t-shirt orders, if you ordered a t-shirt and you haven't sent money, do it.
Yeah, you've got exactly like 2 days to do so.
Yeah.
Next week, I will be announcing what t-shirts we have for sale.
Yep. And they'll be going to the highest bidder.
That's right. Ooh, that's not a bad idea. Sell them to the highest bidder, and then anything past what the t-shirt actually costs, we'll actually donate to the Laurentides Autism Foundation.
There you go. And the charity shoot, speaking of which, June 28th, Restigouche Gun Club. Special guest Steve Lee. Come one, come all. It's going to be Sorry, go ahead, Trevor.
I'll let you finish, then I want to tell you about another special guest that will be there.
Okay. Trap and Silhouette and Gen Rifle Shooting IPSC style mini match and all of that. Go ahead.
Special Sean guest. Sean Bevins, the executive vice president of the NFA, sent me a Facebook message on Friday asking me to call him. So I called him and what can you do for you? Was my, you know, the first words out of my mouth. What can I do for you? You know, all right. Yep. And if NFA calls, you know, what can I do to help? So he said, basically, I'm paraphrasing here a little bit. It's time that the NFA associate itself with the best shoot in Canada. I may be taking some liberties, but that was the gist of it. They want to sponsor SummerSlam.
Oh, very okay. Cool.
Yeah. So then I also told him, he asked about shooting, so he doesn't have a black badge. So what I've done is I've invited him to be an NFA presence at the charity shoot. Come down a couple of days early. I'll pick him up at the airport. We'll make sure he gets his black badge while he's here. I've sent him off the manual, the exams, the rule book, registration form, the whole nine yards, and he's supposed to get all that done before he comes down, and we'll get him a black badge. Have them take part in the charity shooting, hopefully pick up some memberships for the NFA in the process, and then he'll be back again for SummerSlam. So I think it'd just be awesome to have NFA presence right there with us at our charity shoot.
That is really cool.
Be good for us, yeah.
Really neat.
Yep.
Yeah. Sean's a great guy. I don't know if you follow him on Facebook or not, or if you've ever talked to him in person, but he's a really cool, down-to-earth guy.
Very nice. Cool.
Yeah, neat. The Practical Armed Response Academy shooting course, that's August 2nd and 3rd. I don't know how up-to-date this is. Is one space still available?
Yes, one space is still available, and one person still needs to pay. Amy Fluelling, Owen's wife. That's just the one there. Everybody else is paid out.
In your throat there.
We'll send that along. Cancellation by July 1st for a full refund. Anything after that, you don't get your money back. Basically, it's first come, first serve. So
yeah, there's one spot left, basically. So if you want to shoot with Tommy, send me an email, send me an EMT. You'll be on the list.
Yep. And the multi-gun, thanks for mentioning that. That's August 16th and 17th, 12 stages. That's in Restigouche.
I think I'm going to actually put out registration forms and pre-register people and pre-squad people.
Okay.
I expect our numbers are going to go up significantly from last year, and right now I'm capping it at 80.
Okay.
All right.
So, wow. That's getting big.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, my goodness. No, I'm sorry. You go first. We're Canadian. Yeah, what can we do? No, you go first. No, I'm serious. You go first. I'm sorry.
Well, while we're talking about Restigouche, quick update on SummerSlam. There are now only about 11 spots left for the weekend dates. The dates during the week have oodles and noodles of room. And a reminder or an announcement, basically the tickets are now on sale for the Remington Versamax that's sponsored by Freedom Ventures in Halifax. So it's $10 a ticket or 3 for $20. You can get those by sending an EMT to restigouchegunclub@gmail.com. Win yourself a Versamax. Unless you're Luke Giroux, you do not qualify.
He won the Daniel Defense last year, right?
The bum.
Yeah.
All right, no more squirrels, right. I promise.
Sure.
Thunderbird Tactical Carbine Clinic, or Carbine Clinic. Carbine, right, carbine, depending on whether you're north or south of the border. Daniel Shaw of Gunfighter Cast is going to be here. And I'm really looking forward to this one myself. On October 11th, 12 people is the number of people we're letting into the course.
Yeah, and it's full.
It is full. Get yourself on a waiting list.
Yep, we can do that.
Because probably people will drop out. $200, and a round count of about 400 rounds-ish.
Mm-hmm. Money is also due now, right?
Everybody's due. Paid, so... Well, except for Trevor Furlott and Owen Fluelling. Other than those two bums, everybody's paid up.
Yeah, so I guess that's it for events and news. Yeah. I guess there's is some other news here on the amnesty deal that just came out recently by the Conservative Party. So this amnesty allows the owners of semi-automatic rifles, specifically the Swiss Arms and CZ-858, to own them for another 2 years, during which period they can only be transported to be sold to a museum or someone with a rare prohibited firearms license. That is a prohibited license, which is rare.
Right.
Or turned into the police for destruction.
So that's right. So people can still own these. They can still keep them. They won't get prosecuted if they get caught with it, provided they get caught with it at their house in safe storage, or they're transporting them either to, like said there, a museum, someone with a prohibited firearms license, or turning into the police for destruction. So
how do we get our gun ranges to be called museums?
No, we don't. We simply get this legislation revoked, or
that's right,
decision revoked. We don't continue to work around poor gun laws with workarounds and try to find solutions, because eventually it gets tightened down so much there are no more solutions.
That's right. No more compromise. That's kind of the idea behind the no compromise images that a lot of us have on our Facebooks. Yep. You know, we're not compromising anymore. We want the bad laws gone. And we want good laws put back in. Actually, no laws put back in place would be ideal, but that's not going to happen, unfortunately. So we want some reasonable gun laws.
One of the things that you can do is get everybody you know to get a PAL. The more license holders we have on the books in Canada, the more power they have, the lobby groups have, when they go to the government and say, look, you know, X number of Canadians are gun owners. And you, the only way to prove that you're a gun owner in Canada is with that license. So that's the more licenses we have, the more power we bring to the table.
And not only that, the next thing you should do as soon as you have your license, and even before if you're waiting for it, is join the NFA or the CSSA. I read somewhere recently that there have been an additional, I can't remember if it was 10 or 20,000 members in the last month due to this alone.
Awesome.
So people are stepping up and signing up. More people need to do it. We need to strengthen our gun lobbies, because they're the ones that actually help influence what's going on. And we talk about that actually in just a couple minutes with Todd Brown of the Concerned Gun Owners of Alberta.
Yeah, so let's cut to this interview with Todd Brown.
Yeah, we'll do that. And just to let you guys know that Trevor's not there, because Trevor's going to sleep now.
Yep.
I need a concealed carry. I open carry in Utah.
All right, so joining us now, we've got Todd Brown of the Concerned Gun Owners of Alberta, correct?
To the best of my knowledge, yep.
Sure. Now, we had you on before, and it was just you and me before. It was just a conversation that we had that I managed to record, and you didn't realize I was recording it. But anyway, there we go. It was a good conversation, so it made it into the show. But welcome back to the show on an official basis, I guess. This time you know you're being recorded and being interviewed, so I don't know how that changes things, but I guess we'll see. So anyway, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. I won't cuss quite so much.
Whether I bleep you out or I bleep Trevor out, it doesn't matter. I'm usually bleeping somebody at some point, so it's not a big deal.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, we wanted to have you back on because you have such a wealth of information regarding the Firearms Act, and also you work with the NFA, and I believe you are working on some proposals or drafting up some ideas anyway for maybe at least a suggestion of what maybe our gun laws could look like in the future if we get what we want.
Yeah, this is my idea. Like, two things I want to clarify is that, yes, I work with the NFA whenever possible, and in whatever situation, you know. Mostly, it's just discussing things, make sure that we're all on the same page. And 99% of the time, we're on the same track, heading in the same direction. And I just want to make sure that I'm not stepping on somebody else's toes by saying something or whatever. So that's kind of how I work with them. And I wish I could work with more groups like that as well. You know, they've been very, very open to me and my information and everything. That being said, what I've got here is I'm not really working with the NFA on this. But they just happen to be going in the same direction again, okay, to the best of my knowledge. What they've got going with the government you know, I'm not privy to that.
Sure. Okay.
But I, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't stepping on anybody's toes or anything. But what I've got here, what I was putting together, is just a suggestion. Like these are my ideas that I'm just suggesting that maybe it'll start a discussion on what any new firearms legislation could be based on instead of what we have now, which is based on confiscation.
Right.
So I kind of call it a firearms charter. And these are just a few of the policies and principles that I personally have come up with. And, you know, just to start a discussion.
Sure.
Because whenever there's a problem, it's always real nice to have a solution or a suggestion behind it instead of just complaining about, you know, this is wrong and that's wrong. Well, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, and we've had that discussion before, or not you and I, but I've seen this discussion before where pro-gun people are saying, well, you know, it's all fine and well to say gun control sucks, but what's your solution? You can't just say this sucks and get rid of it without offering a solution back. And so yeah, I guess this is what you're doing, is trying to come up with a solution that we can actually, a viable solution that we could, you know, say, well, let's use this instead.
Yeah, this is just some suggestions, because what people don't always realize is that, yes, my goal is to get rid of the old C-68 Firearms Act as well. Like, I don't like it. I think it was wrong. You know, there's a whole bunch of other reasons. But, you know, that being said, if you just get rid of that legislation, there's going to be a huge legislative and political vacuum left behind. And as everybody knows, nature abhors a vacuum.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, it's too bad that a vacuum would be left, because up until 78, there was no vacuum, and we created that vacuum by starting to fill a hole that didn't even exist. And now that the hole's been filled, you're right. If you empty it, then all of a sudden, well, people are going to be screaming, there's going to be blood in the streets. Now, of course, there won't be, but you can't tell them that until after it's all over, I guess.
But you got to, you know, I hate to say it, but in some ways, you got to be politically correct, or you got to play the political game to some degree, because you're right. There are going to be a mess of anti-gunners saying, well, you're just getting rid of all the laws. There's going to be no restrictions in place. There's going to be nothing in there to find the guys that are evil, you know, and they're saying this not realizing that evil guys are going to do evil, whether there's laws in place or not.
That's right. So, what was that you were going to say there, Owen? I heard you start to cut in there.
I don't remember.
Couldn't have been that important.
just remember that, well, Todd and I talked about this before the show started, that, well, Todd's a talker. He gets going. So if you want to say something, Owen, just interrupt him like I normally do.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. At any rate, so I guess that I'll just go over a few of these things and we can kind of discuss them as they go. You know, I don't have a whole lot of things down, just three or four points that, you know, we could possibly base some new legislation on, or, you know, when people are talking to their MPs, say, well, you know, I kind of like this idea. Could this be made part of the new legislation? You know, just some suggestions to throw out there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair enough?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, the first one I was thinking of was no criminal sanctions for victimless crimes. Now, the best example I can think of is the safe storage laws. Because really, if you're transporting your firearm in your truck, or you're cleaning it at home, or you're just packing it across your field to go shoot some gophers or something, the first thing that the RCMP are going to do is they're going to throw an unsafe storage charge at you.
And that seems to be their catch-all. Yeah, it doesn't matter what you do. If they find you with a gun, they just charge you with unsafe storage.
Yeah, and it, you know, it doesn't matter what you're doing with it. Like, as far as I'm concerned, when I'm at home and there's a gun out, it's in use. Whether it's there for predator control, or if it's there because I'm cleaning it, or I'm showing it off to somebody, it's not being stored. It's being used, and there's different things that I can use it for. I can use it just because I like looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
What a nice piece of engineering marvel this is, you know, or how am I going to fix this gun, or, you know, all sorts of different things. You know, you could be having it out to clean. If you're using it if it's in use for some reason, there should be no unsafe storage charge, because after they do that and say, well, oh, let the courts sort it out, well, the process is the punishment. In the case of Ian Thompson.
I was, you know, just going to say Ian Thompson is the perfect example of that.
Yeah, you know, precisely. So, you know, why should the process be the punishment? And so no criminal sanctions for victimless crimes, you know, it's really, it's ridiculous.
Yep, I agree. I can think of another really good example of the victimless crime is the ATTs. If I don't bring my ATT with me when I take my restricted to the range, well, technically I've committed a crime. However, unless I actually stop and shoot somebody with one of my guns or commit a crime with it, there's no crime and there's no victim. Yet, I can still be charged and, you know, get my guns confiscated.
Paperwork, please.
Yep.
Okay. Another one. No new laws that already deal with gun misuse or criminal use of firearms. Like, we've already got a whole mess of laws on the books that were not being enforced. Why do we need to double up on something we're not using anyway?
Well, that's kind of like the new cell phone laws they brought in. Didn't we already have distracted driving laws before they brought in the no cell phone use while you're driving? It's kind of the same thing. It's redundancy, right? We already have a law that says it's illegal to kill somebody. Do we need a law that says it's illegal to kill somebody with a gun as well?
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter if you kill somebody with a gun or a knife or a stick. They're just as dead.
Right.
What does it matter? It's the criminal intent. It's like going back to the definition of a weapon. It's anything used to kill, injure, or maim. Where is it? I got in front of me here somewhere. Any designed to be used or intended for use in causing injury or death to any person or for the purpose of threatening or intimidating any person.
Right. So basically anything at all.
Yeah. I throw my coffee cup at you and get charged with assault with a weapon.
Sure.
Okay. So, we've got those laws in place. If you commit a robbery and you use a firearm, well, you've committed a robbery with a weapon. There's already a law in place for that. So why are we doubling up and making it more complicated than it needs to be? Let's just enforce the laws that are in place. If you insist on having something to categorize firearms, okay, throw in another 3 years because it was a firearm. If you want to add something to the current laws that we have, I'm all for looking at that. I may or may not agree with what they propose, but that is something that I'd be ready and willing to look at.
It's at least a little bit more reasonable than what we have now.
Yeah, precisely. So what else have we got here? We've got, how about some fact-based policies that are subject to review in, say, 5 to 7 years or something and have some sort of sunset clause on it?
So you mean you'd like them to come up with laws that are actually effective?
Boy, that's a new thought, isn't it? Yeah, so after 5 or 7 years, you go back, you check your facts and your statistics and say, okay, did this have any effect on what we intended to control? If the answer is no, why is it there?
Right.
There's lots of laws out there that have absolutely no effect on anybody, and I always ask, well, why are they there? Why is this bad law there if it's not intended on being used at some point? If you don't intend on using it, get rid of it.
Makes sense to me.
So, Owen, what do you think?
Yeah, that's kind of a no-brainer, you would think.
You're kind of quiet in the background there.
Yeah, I tend to be that way.
Okay. I won't pick on you too much. But anyway, so fact-based policies at any rate. So, and the sunset clauses, it would be similar to the assault weapons ban that was down in the States years ago, and they had a sunset clause on it.
Well, yeah, I believe that was the only way they could get it passed, and it's a good thing that they had that clause put in because It effectively, that law, like you just described, that law was absolutely useless. They saw absolutely no change in any sort of, victims or crimes or anything because of that law. It was an assault weapons ban. So they basically defined what an assault weapon was, which was basically a scary-looking rifle. And they said, in 10 years, if the streets aren't safer, we'll get rid of this law. And 10 years later, whoa, who knew? People don't attack each other with AR-15s and whatnot? No.
So I think that's a good thing to put in there. You got to have sunset clauses on it because if it's a bad law, if it's not working and it's costing us money, why is it there? Is it busy work? Is it a make work project? Is this how the government creates jobs?
Well, actually, you hit on a point there. It probably is. And if you look at governments and the way that they run, most of them tend to build themselves and inflate themselves. And they do that by coming up with things to enforce and coming up with bad laws. Well, at least it created this many jobs. But, you know, that's, to me, that's not a good reason. I'm all for small government, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, join the club. I have a bit of a libertarian bent on.
Yeah, you actually, you were talking about one of the libertarian candidates in your area, I think, saying that he was looking at some of this charter that you've written up and is using it, or at least considering it for passing around to people who are asking for suggestions for alternative.
Yeah, well, it was Tim Mullen, and we got talking about this sort of thing, and it's like, well, have you got any ideas? And he'll put his own spin on these as well. But I think it gave him a little bit of wiggle room. So when somebody says, well, if you want to get rid of all the gun laws, then what are you going to do? So right. Things like this, I think, are very reasonable, very democratic, if you will, and they're. Along with another idea that I've got, it'll appeal to a lot more people than just getting rid of everything and going, okay, now what?
Yep.
Okay. So one of the last things would be this one, I don't have all the ideas. I don't have it all worked out. I just have a rough plan in my head. So, feel free to question me on it or whatever. And I know that it's going to stir up a bit of controversy with some of your listeners. But that being said, some sort of graduated certification system. Okay, not a licensing system like your partner Trevor was saying that he liked your last show or the show before. I can't remember which.
Yeah, he said he liked the convenience of having the license. Why don't you rip him apart and tell him why he's wrong? Because he's not here to defend himself, and that's really the best way to do it.
Oh, and here I was hoping I could teach him. But anyway, Trevor, you were wrong. A license is the problem, okay? Trevor, a license means that what you are doing is already illegal, and a license is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal. A firearms license is actually not permission to own a gun. A firearms license is a defense against the criminal charge brought in by sections 91 and 92 of the criminal code. Do I have to read that so everybody knows what I'm talking about?
So how does that work then? Would you equate that to a driver's license?
Well, go ahead and explain how it's different than a driver's license.
Well, a driver's license, if you're caught without a driver's license, are you stuck in jail for 5 years, have your car impounded and sold or destroyed, your house broken into, make sure you don't have any other cars stored there?
That's funny. I like that.
Well,
no, I'm not. But the punishment is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a system of licensing or what was the word used?
Okay, let me explain it this way then. Anybody, and I mean anybody, I don't care if you're 10, 12, 21, 60, you can buy as many cars as you want without a license, without registering them, and without insurance. You can park them on your own property, and if you have enough property, you can drive them around to your heart's content on your own property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but soon as you take them out onto public roads, that's a whole different ball of wax. There's rules and regulations that you have to follow. You have to be insured in case you have an accident or something, that everybody's covered and everybody is compensated properly. And the license basically says that you're competent to drive this vehicle. And we have a graduated licensing system for vehicles. You know, if you have a class 5, you can't drive a semi-truck.
Right.
You can drive a tandem gravel truck. You know, if you have a class 3, I think it's class 3 that's your normal driver's license, right?
Class 5 is your normal driver's license. 3 is air brakes.
Yeah, that's right. And 1. I've got a class 1. I never went through the class 3, so that's why I kind of hesitated on that. But I can drive a big rig with air brakes because I have a class 1. Okay, that means that I also can drive a whole bunch of other things because of that class 1. But if I have, say I have a class 6 or 7, what's a motorbike license? Class 6?
Sure, why not? Make it up. It's fine.
Okay,
6 or 7,
It's a gun show, not a motorcycle show, so we don't
know. It could be different between province to province, too. So.
But the point is, if I just get a motorcycle license, which was actually, by the way, the first one I ever had, I can't drive a car.
Right.
Because I'm not licensed to drive a car. Okay, so what I'm proposing is a graduated licensing system, a graduated certification system, because the licensing system automatically assumes you're a criminal and you're committing a criminal act, and with a firearm, you are a criminal before the court, and you have to defend yourself by saying, I have this license to own a firearm. Okay, and the license is a defense against the charge of Section 91, which states every person commits an offense who possesses a firearm without being the holder of a license, or in the case of restricted or prohibited, a certification certificate for it.
Right.
Okay.
So what you're suggesting then is the certification system, and like you said, we'll talk about the graduated system in a second here, but you want to get away from the fact that owning firearms is illegal. And so the license, you don't need the license to own the gun, you just need the license to operate the firearm off of your property.
Or wherever, yes. Okay, so you're certified. Like, say, if we get rid of what we want to get rid of, we want to get rid of the Firearms Act in its entirety, we want to get rid of Sections 91 and 92, and we want the definitions changed back to something that doesn't define a firearm as a weapon.
Right.
Okay, I believe we discussed that one on my last visit here, so I won't get into that again.
Right.
So we want to get rid of Sections 91 and 92, and that will effectively decriminalize simple possession of a firearm. That means you're walking around with a firearm in your hand. It is not against the law. You don't need any paperwork to have it, as was the old FAC system, which was a firearms acquisition certificate. You needed it to acquire, not to possess.
Right. Yeah, once your FAC – well, I had an FAC. When my FAC expired, I didn't have to turn in all my guns. I just simply couldn't buy any more until I reactivated it, or I reapplied for it.
Precisely. Okay, so that's what I'm suggesting. Is that we
So a similar system to that, then, you like a certification system where, say, your certification one allowed you your non-restricteds, what we would normally consider non-restricteds these days.
Yeah,
certification two would be your restricteds, and then, you know, your full auto and stuff maybe would be a more restricted version of the certificate somewhere along the line.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call them restricted, non-restricted, and stay with the same terminology that we have here, because that's half the reason we're in the jam that we are, because
right.
We have a prohibited class, and the prohibited class is all about confiscation, because as soon as a firearm is moved into that class, nobody's got the proper licensing for it, and they say, okay, you don't have the license for it, so you're in illegal possession of a firearm, turn it in.
Yeah. Yeah, which is what they did with Swiss Arms and the CZ-858. They've just now we're going to talk later on the show. Actually, I think we already talked about it due to the magic of editing about the amnesty and what that's allowing. But that's a whole other ball game.
Yeah, that's another rabbit hole that we probably don't have time to get into. So what I'm suggesting with the certification system, and I stress that it's a certification system, Trevor. It's not a license. We want certification.
Right.
Okay, because licensing means that you're doing something illegal and need permission to do that task, or you need a defense against the charge of doing that particular activity.
Now, this will be out of character, but I'm going to defend Trevor real quick here. I think what he really likes about the license system that we have now is the fact that he can go into a gun store, and that card basically says, I've already had my safety training, and I've already had my criminal background check done. You don't need to call anybody. I show you the card. It's not expired. You sell me a gun or ammunition, and I walk out.
How's that different from a certification system?
Nothing at all. I just wanted to be clear that this certification system would give us that same privilege, that same convenience, that we wouldn't be losing anything on our end for that, I guess.
Yeah. You know, of course there's going to be, you know, hiccups and there's going to be some other discussions, but that's just the basic gist of it, because I want to see simple possession decriminalized.
Right. And I think that's got to be the first thing we do. I mean, that's kind of key. If we want to change the Firearms Act in Canada, that's kind of like the number one big issue. Everything after that, I mean, there's a whole bunch of other things we'd like to see changed. Magazine restriction laws, those are silly. We'd like to see those changed. However, that's not the big issue. We'd like to see concealed carry laws in Canada. That is a big issue, but it's not the biggest. I think the biggest, most important issue that we need to get out of the way is the decriminalization of firearms ownership in Canada.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I'm suggesting the certification, and why I get my feathers get so ruffled when somebody says, I like licensing.
Well, I think what most people mean to say is, I like the convenience of licensing. Well, and I can't fault them. Yeah, I can't fault them for that, because it is very convenient. However, like you said, the word license is that's where the stigma is.
Yeah, and you got to remember, in law, wording is everything. Terminology is everything. And if the term license means permission to do something that would otherwise be illegal, we can't use that term.
Right.
If we don't want firearms to be illegal in Canada, we cannot use the term license.
Yeah, so certification is a great word. And like you said, we've had certificates before in the past. The FACs, we had them. Let's bring them back, or at least a version of them, because in my mind, they work great. They did still have, and I think, I don't know where you stand on this, but this is where I stand on it, mandatory safety training before you can get a certificate. But that's the FAC did have that. I had to take a course before I could get my FAC, and that course had mandatory safety training in it. I think all of us on the show agree that mandatory safety training is a good idea, because it does have a proven statistical track record of reducing accidental gun deaths in Canada. I know our American listeners don't like that, and I do understand that, and I know even some Canadians don't like that, and I do understand that, because it is an infringement on our freedoms. However, it does actually work. It is actually statistically proven to be effective. So I can't fault it.
Provided there's something in place there before all the rules come into effect, like when the Firearms Act came into effect and everybody had to take this course, it's like, okay, who do we take the course from? There's nobody out there to take the course
exactly. from. Exactly. Yeah, we need that framework in place before we get the new laws put in. Yeah. I mean, and that just makes sense. But then again, the government's doing this, so of course it won't. They'll do it backwards again.
It's the government. It doesn't have to make sense. But yeah, I'm all for education. That's what the CGOA is all about, is educating people. And if it has to do with education, I'm all for it. It's just, how are we going to implement that education? Who's going to do the implementing? And who's going to do the basic draft of what's being taught?
Well, the CFOs could do that, don't you think? Don't you like the CFOs?
Okay, you want to get into the CFOs?
We've got about 5 minutes, so yes, let's go into the CFO here just for a little while and see where it takes us.
If we've only got 5 minutes, this took way longer than I expected it to. But I basically covered what I proposed at any rate. So yeah, that's always a good thing. Okay, I'm going to go to the CFOs. For those of you that do not know what section gives the CFOs their power, it's Section 58, and I'm just going to read it real quick just for information's sake. A chief firearms officer who issues a license, an authorization to carry, or an authorization to transport may attach any reasonable condition to it that the chief firearms officer considers desirable in the particular circumstances and in the interests of the safety of the holder or any other person. Now, I may have to take that and pick it apart for you on another show, since we only have 5 minutes.
I think it basically means a CFO can do whatever the heck he wants.
Well, there's a whole bunch of terms in there that are very discretionary, so that I could talk for about half an hour on that section alone. So actually, what I wanted to tell you about was something else real quick. I'm going to ask you a couple questions, and then I'll read these. Have either of you been a reference for somebody wanting a firearms license?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember the questions that you were asked when you were phoned to verify that, or when they were doing the reference call?
More or less.
Okay. For those of you that haven't, I'm gonna read them. There's about seven questions. Were you pressured in any way to act as a reference? Tell me in any situations where this person has displayed violent behavior in the past. Tell me about any circumstance where this person acted in a way that caused you to feel he or she would become violent. tell me about any circumstance or any situation where this person would approve of violence to resolve a problem.
So basically, Owen, anybody in the SCA, you couldn't be a reference for.
Tell me about any circumstance where this person has ever made statements showing a fascination with violence, such as school, workplace, or any other types of violence. Is there anything else that you would like to add about this person that I haven't asked? And the last one, you have no issues or concerns about this person having firearms. Now, these are all worded, they're very leading questions, and they're all worded in a way that are assuming that this person is already a criminal, and all they're trying to do is get information out of you to take them to jail. Because these questions are like, you know, did this person ever do this? No, they're assuming they did. So is it, tell me when he did it.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's basically they're trying to get you to talk about, like, they don't say, like you said, they don't say, have you known him to be violent? No, they say, when was he violent? So exactly. It's like asking somebody, did you beat your wife tonight or yesterday?
Yeah, it's like not, you don't beat your wife, do you? And you'd say, no. It's like, well, what if I asked you, well, when did you beat her last?
Yeah, yeah, so it you're right, they're very leading questions, and they're, you know, and they're not even the intrusive ones. I mean, don't even get me started on the questions that they ask my wife about me.
Yeah, but these are the general questions, and I've been asked these for some other folks that I was referenced for, and pretty well word for word, that's exactly what they ask you. And it's like, you know, they're assuming that you're already a criminal and you don't even have your firearms license yet.
Right.
You know, and this is how the RCMP treats firearms owners now. We're just a criminal in waiting because we have to, the license is a defense against the charge of having a firearm. And they're asking us questions that are assuming that we're already criminals. And they're just trying to figure out where the proof is that we are so they can throw us in jail. The Firearms Act has zero to do with criminal misuse of firearms.
Well, it
creates criminals.
Yeah, I think you hit a good point there. I think another thing that we need to do once we decriminalize firearms ownership is get the RCMP out of being the people who are in charge of it.
Yes, yes. There's a name for RCMP that, or any police force for that matter, that make up rules that they enforce as they go along. It's called a police state.
Right. Yeah, and okay. Yeah,
and I hate to say that in Canada because, you know, the RCMP were, you know, when they started out they were a very good police force, but something's happened in the interim, and most of it I've seen happen since the Firearms Act was brought in. So, yeah.
And I think we should clarify that we have no issues with the frontline officers. I think we all know and are friends with some frontline officers. It's not the frontline officers that we have any problems with. We respect our law enforcement officers. You know, we have no issues with them. It's the upper brass. It's the politicians and the bureaucrats that are running the organization. That's where the issue lies.
Yeah, and this last gun grab shows that in spades.
Absolutely. Well, Todd, we have pretty much run out of time here. I do want to thank you again for joining us, and believe me, we're going to have you on again because, like I said, you've got just bucketfuls of information to tell us about. So, like I said, thanks again for joining us, and we'll get you on again as soon as we can.
Well, thank you very much for having me here, and you just wait till I let you know what the CFOs sent me here a while ago. You're just going to... have a bird over that.
Yes, I know what you're talking about, and yes, we are. So, all right, guys, we'll be right back in just a second.
That's a good way to cut in. We're back, and so is Trevor. Wake up, Trevor.
What? I'm here. Put the gun down. No, I'm kidding. Don't put the gun down.
Okay, listener feedback. This first one, I'll take the first one since it's short. No, we better give it to Trevor. Trevor, right. Do you want to take the first one?
No. That was patronizing. Boss B says, morning, guys. How does he know it's morning?
He must have written this in the morning, although technically it is afternoon right now by 8 minutes. So sorry, Ross.
Squirrel. Ross is a nicer person than we are. He says, hope you and your families made it through the avalanche of snow okay. And with luck, it will be the last for the winter. Take care, Ross. So Ross sent this email last week when we got that friggin' snow bomb that buried Halifax, Moncton pretty bad. We were okay in the north, though. But
yeah, there were a couple of school districts down, well, PEI and Nova Scotia, they were closed for 2 days in a row, which hardly ever happens.
Yeah,
in
Bathurst.
The, in the colleges.
Yeah, they pulled snow plows off the road. It was so bad.
Yeah, they closed a section of road between Moncton and Nova Scotia.
Yep.
Like, outright closed. You know how bad it has to be in Canada to close a road?
I remember, and I know we're not supposed to be taking too much time in this section, but I remember...
But here we go!
Yeah, here we go. I remember a story I heard where these Americans had experienced a snowstorm and their highway was closed, and these people were trying to get to the next town. They could only get there by the highway. And so they had a friend with them who was Canadian. They said, just switch seats. And so, okay, fine. So they pulled up to the checkpoint, and the trooper's like, no, I'm sorry, you can't go. The road's closed. And the guy leans over across it. Yeah, but the driver's Canadian. He's Canadian. Trooper's like, you are? He pulls out his Canadian driver's license. Oh, you are Canadian. Okay, go ahead.
Wow. So either says one of two things. We don't care if you die.
Because you're Canadian.
And you don't count. Or, yeah, lead the way. Show us how it's done. It's, I'd like to think of the second one. All right, next one.
Yes, this is from Chris. He says, howdy, boys. I've been listening to some of the back episodes of the podcast and have heard some tips mentioned for keeping the dust down coming from your tumbler. My solution is that I use Dillon Rapid Polish. I'm using a 50-50 mixture of walnut media and corncob media, and I get zero dust with the polish added. Plus, my brass comes out brilliantly shiny. Keep up the good work, guys. Love the show. P.S. When is McClatchy going to have a guest appearance on Action Shooting Radio?
How come Owen doesn't get asked about whether he's going to have a guest appearance?
Because I'm barely on this show.
I answered him as Chris Babes, I think, who sent this in, and I think my reply was the first episode we have about airsoft.
Oh, I hate you. Although it's funny.
So the rapid polish, I also use it, but I don't know. I still get dust. The dust accumulates inside the tumbler. It doesn't come out. The dust gets into the air, dump your media into your separator, and you start separating the media from the brass. That's when the dust really gets airborne in your home. And personally, I haven't noticed a difference in that dust with the polish or without the polish. So maybe the mixture of corn cob and walnut is what's keeping the dust down for you, Chris. I'm not sure, but yeah.
By the way, it's Chris R., not Chris Babes. I'm not going to say his last name in case he doesn't want it listed, but it's not Chris Babes.
Today. Yeah,
good for you.
Running his mouth about 1911s or something.
Sounds about right.
So, all right. If it's that crystal, then yeah. It doesn't matter because he's off the Christmas card list. Next email.
All right. Well, this one comes to us from Dave J. He writes, hi, Matt. Just in case you do not get a chance to try yours yet, here's my take on the KCI mags. Last night I ran about 250 rounds through 5 of my 17 pin to 10 KCI mags in my Glock 17. Not a single issue. All dropped free on mag release, all fed without a hitch or misfeed. Couldn't tell the difference between those or genuine Glock mag. They worked flawlessly. So, good. I'm glad to hear that because I still haven't had my Glock out to the range with the new mags yet. He continues on, and this is the interesting part. He says, my 2 cents on your recent conversations on changes to the Firearms Act. It's interesting because he didn't know we were having Todd on this week. And we actually talked about this in the interview you just listened to. But he continues on with some really interesting ideas, and I think we should talk about them here. Safety training is key, so the training course with actual shooting involved to get your license still needs to be in place. And by still needs to be in place, I think he means needs to be put in place, because there's no actual shooting involved right now to get your license. So I kind of think that has merit, but at the same time, I think the safety handling is more important, and I think you can learn to safely handle a firearm without actually shooting it. And I think you could do that in a classroom setting. What do you guys think on that?
I think that the game changes once you introduce live ammunition into the scenario, and that's where you're going to separate the men from the boys and who can maintain their composure and stay calm.
That's true. I do agree with that. However, there is a proven track record of this current safety training that we have where we don't shoot live ammo actually being effective. So do you think introducing live ammo will actually increase that safety margin that we've kind of seen because of the safety training that we've had?
No, I don't think so. Not. I mean, it could, but I think it would be very marginal because it's the safety part is less about shooting and more about find a firearm, you know how to handle it.
Yeah.
You know how right, to pick well, I think it up the very unload first, it and check to see that it's yeah. safe. That's
well, the very first rule is treat every firearm as if it's yeah. loaded, right? So if you're doing that already, whether or not it's loaded, I think you're going to learn the movements you need to learn and, you know, learning to control the muzzle and stuff without actually having live ammo in the gun, which, you know, I have no problem teaching people with live ammo in the gun. It's just that you're going to add time, cost, logistics and stuff, you know, to transport these people to the range. They can actually, you know, do this live fire training, which, as you know, Owen, Trevor, anybody who's taking their black badge, we all know there's a lot of logistics involved whenever you're actually at the range shooting live.
Hard
enough
time to get
ammo.
People into classes now. Can you imagine if the class incorporated a shooting component?
Right. So you'd not only have to go to the class, but then you have to go to the range after. Yeah. All right. So moving on, he continues with firearm categories. Oh, sorry. No, I missed a spot. He says, license is still needed to acquire and shoot firearms. An expired license means you can't buy or shoot. Fines for shooting with an expired firearm, essentially the same as automobiles. Now, one thing we did just talk about, and Trevor, you weren't here for, but we're not going to use the word license anymore because license means that you're doing something illegal and getting a pass by having the license. We're using a certification. Were you going to use the word certification instead because that helps us stay away from the criminal aspect of firearms ownership, which of course we all want to get rid of. But I don't necessarily disagree with this. If you have a certificate that kind of like the FAC allows you to buy or allowed us to buy firearms, but when it expired, we weren't in possession of a prohibited device at that point. We weren't going to be prosecuted for our FACs being expired. We just simply couldn't buy any more guns. And that FAC was also our proof that we had had our safety training. So it was just like we have our license now. It was a plastic card with our picture on it. But it was a certificate instead. I don't know about the part where you're not allowed to actually operate the firearm without the certificate. I think that once you have your safety training doesn't go away just because your certificate expired.
It's a little bit of giving in. It's better than having your license expire and then you're a criminal. Okay, your license is expired. Your certificate's expired. You can still have your guns, but you can't shoot them until you renew your license. That would be better than what we currently have.
Yeah, I agree. Now, let's put a really small little asterisk there in, saying because he says it's essentially the same as automobiles. Well, let's keep it the same. If you have an expired certificate, obviously you've had your safety training. If you shoot and operate your firearms on your own property, that should still continue to be allowed. Just as your automobile license is, you can drive your car on your own property without a valid driver's license. It's when you take it off onto public property that now you have to have your license, or in this case, a certificate being valid. I'd be okay with that. If you got your certificate and you live in a huge ranch, you know, and it expires and you're still out in your ranch shooting, I don't care. Just once you come onto public property, you got to have a valid license certificate to kind of demonstrate that, yes, you've had your safety training and that, you know, you're competent to be out and about with your firearm off your own property. So anyway, something to bear in mind. I mean, obviously, we haven't thought all these through yet. This is the first time we're reading this email together. So maybe it'll be something that we'll think about throughout the week and continue to mull over. And maybe we'll comment on it some more next week. But let's continue on. Firearm categories. He says, a gun is a gun is a gun. No need to have classes. But to appease the public, and then we'll get into that in a second, but I agree, a gun is a gun is a gun. Why do we have to have categories?
It's 100%. You agree? I agree 100%. I mean, yeah, the only so. Gun that really should be in a different category, and I would call it kind of the...
nuclear missiles.
Crap. No, I'd call it the crap category, and that's 1911s. But other than that...
right.
No, I think we can agree as a gun is a gun is a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would like to see something like this, and like he said, this is just to appease the public. Prohibited firearms would be any full auto. You're allowed to shoot those at the range, and you need a restricted PAL. Restricteds, he would call handguns and short-barreled or short rifles. You can shoot them anywhere you're legally allowed to shoot a non-restricted, as long as you have your RPAL, and that RPAL would show that you have the training or competency in smaller firearms. I don't know why you need to be more competent with a shorter gun, but, you know, we are talking about the liberal mindset here, and he did say this is to appease the public, so I do see where he's coming from here a bit. Right? Got to give them something. I don't want to. But realistically, I think we all know that with the mindset in Canada, we will not get away with no laws. There will have to be some sort of compromise. And as much as we say no compromise, we all know we're Canadians. We're going to say sorry and say it's okay, do whatever you like in the end. So non-restricted, he says, would be everything else. And you're allowed to shoot where you're legally allowed to shoot. Basically, it's just your simple certificate. So anyway. No magazine capacity restrictions. I'm all for that. I think magazine capacity restrictions are silly. Storage. He says storage should be, firearms should be stored appropriately to prevent unauthorized use. Either the gun or the ammo can be locked up. If you want to display your gun on the wall, then lock up the ammo. A gun is only a club without ammo. Now, that's a good point. However, what if you want your gun for self-defense in your home? You know, the best way to keep a gun for self-defense is loaded. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to use a gun that's not loaded, so there's got to be some sort of give and take there where we can come up with a way to keep guns loaded in the house for self-defense. And I think the perfect way is loaded in a holster on your hip. I mean, that makes sense. It's right there. You know your kids aren't going to get to it.
Right, but it's not stored at that point.
It's not stored at that point.
So if you make that differentiation between storage and use, it's at that point in use. But, for example, I would not feel comfortable, even for self-defense, having a loaded pistol on my bedstand. Not even,
that's right. You know, a loaded shotgun leaning up against the wall. That's not safe. Right. You got to have a, you know, when you have kids in the house, you got to have that even somewhere without. Where you're not going to. Yeah, even it's without. Yeah,
if your tractor was stolen and you call the police to your house.
Yes, you should. So anyway, he says that those are just my ideas of some simple but practical rules. Keep pumping out the shows. He looks forward to the download every Friday. For what it's worth, you need some guest hosts from the west side of Canada. Way too much Eastern influence on the show. He signs off. No compromise, yeah, Dave.
Because there's, you know, not like in Canada, there's any, you know, influence from the west.
No. For the rest of even know they exist.
Yeah. I mean,
Atlantic Canada.
Alberta, where's that?
Never heard of it.
Yeah. What is this Alberta that you speak of? All right. Well, quickly, let's go through these shout-outs because we are over time.
So, to Fusilier, you know, met him at the match, so shout-out to him, Craig, for sending me some lead cleaning cloths months ago, and I forgot to give him a shout-out for that, so thank you very much. Nate at World's End, talked about that place enough already. Toby and Sticks over at the Armed Squirrel Project podcast. They've got a new podcast out. Toby and Sticks used to be on the Polite Society podcast when it was called the Politics and Guns podcast. Now they got their own show called the Armed Squirrels Project, and they actually have a squirrel on the show. It's a lot of fun. You got to check it out. It's, you know, guns and prepping and stuff like that. And to the rest of you bums, Filthy, Todd F., Bolivar, Marcel, Brendan H., Susan Lathrop, Luke Drew, and Press Check Ventures, Owen, you bum. Thank you for donating a total of $250 to watch For Latte get thrown headfirst into the snow over a railing. And if the guys make it over here today, awesome. It will happen today. I'm all for it. It's up to them to get here now. And if they don't show up soon, I'm just going to have to throw myself into the snow, I guess. But people.
Pull a McClatchy. That's the new definition of McClatchy, throwing yourself into a snowbank. Nope, didn't think so. Yeah, I tried. Yeah. You got to give me credit. I tried. All right.
Good enough.
Take us out, right, Owen.
Join one or both of our National Firearms Associations, the CSSA, the NFA. Check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. Like us on Facebook. And be sure to check out all the other great shows on both of the networks we're on, Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network and the Crusader Podcast Network. I'm Owen Flewelling. So long for now. oh yeah, and Matthew and Trevor say hi to or bye to.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.